Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Royal Academy, and good afternoon to our podcast listeners. I'm Alison Bracker. I'm the Events and Lectures Manager at the RA, and it's my great pleasure today to introduce my colleague, Kate Goodwin, who is the Drew Hines Curator of Architecture at the Royal Academy. After completing her degree in architecture at the University of Sydney, Kate took up her position at the Royal Academy and for over 10 years has curated a diverse series of lectures, debates, events, and exhibitions on architecture. Kate co-directed and produced the film Andrea Palladio Through the Eyes of Contemporary Architects, which was shown as part of the Royal Academy's Andrea Palladio exhibition. She has co-curated such exhibitions as Paper Cities, Urban Utopias, which was in 2009, Relics of Old London, Photography and the Spirit of the City, and Tatlin's Tower in 2011. Most recently, of course, Kate is the curator of Sensing Spaces. Please welcome Kate Goodwin.
It's rather a difficult thing to talk about an exhibition which is so much about experience. And I've thought quite a lot about how I might structure this lecture. But probably to start with, how many people have actually seen the exhibition? Okay, about half of you. That does make it slightly easier, I think, of where to start. I've broken the lecture down into two halves. I will talk about the architects, introduce you to them, and talk about their work, some of their inspiration, some of the background bits to it. But I did think I might start by talking about something I think we don't often do, actually the making or the curating of exhibitions, the stuff that you might not see within the spaces, but maybe having heard me talk about it, some of the decisions that were made might become sort of evident within it. And, you know, this has been a really interesting process, actually. It has been a process. It's been about a year and a half, almost 2 years, which is very, very rapid for an exhibition. A lot of my friends, when I said, oh, it's 2 years away, they looked at me and said, it's 2 years away. And I was like, it's 2 years away, it's really soon. And it did go very, very quickly. And it has, you know, it didn't start necessarily with a theoretical position that was trying to prove. It started with a sense of inquiry. How could we talk about the experience of architecture? How could we bring it to the fore? So much of how we discuss architecture, I think, is done through the image, and it's celebrated through the image, through media when we look at it. When you go to exhibitions, I mean, here at the Royal Academy, the summer exhibition, which is wonderfully full of those models and drawings, which I think are fantastic for the imagination, but one always has to imagine into what it might be like to be within those spaces themselves, and then how it might connect to us on a more personal level. And when I was thinking about some of these questions, and it really was a process of inquiry, there was a quote I came across by Edmund Burke, and he said, a definition may be very exact and yet go but a very little way towards informing us of the nature of the thing defined. And I think it's something that echoed in my mind. You know, it wasn't wanting to define what architecture was, wasn't wanting to define architectural experience, but actually to offer and to suggest things that might invite us to engage or think about the nature of architecture. And I might start by sort of sharing what was, you know, no single idea ever generates an exhibition. But there was an experience I had about 5 years ago, which I think has just echoed in the back of my mind and sort of came back to me as I was thinking about these ideas. And it was a conversation I had with an architect. And he was fortunate enough to have a sort of place in Rome at the American Academy there and was sort of working out of his studio. And there was very little work around him, and he was talking about his architecture in this incredibly visceral way where he was describing the choices he'd made, and they were about materials. They were about evoking an emotion in every choice he was making. And it was really personal, and you know, he talked about using a burnt charred wood, which gave a particular sensation that it was about scent, it was about the colour, it was about the texture. And I suddenly felt as though I was within those spaces from the way in which he was talking. And I left this conversation particularly inspired, and I walked down these wonderful stairs in the American Academy, this sort of neoclassical building, and I suddenly was aware of how the light was falling across the surfaces. I was aware of the tread as I walked down, you know, these sort of quite narrow, gentle treads. Someone else walked down next to me and I was aware of their bodies. And that sudden sense of awareness, that heightened engagement with my surroundings was really incredible, and it made me stop. And I thought, wow, if an exhibition can do this to people and make them look around them, then maybe that's a fantastic thing. And I don't know whether it will, but I hope that there's a moment that this exhibition might generate that sort of experience for people outside the galleries. And, you know, it really has been a challenge because architecture exists, and what's interesting about it is it exists under conditions and in a place. You know, there's a site, there's program, there's factors that influence it, that are function, they're a client. Architecture is never generated in isolation, as you might see art. And so when we started to talk about architecture in these sort of terms, it was a challenge, and it was a discussion I had with these architects. That sense of being physically, you know, the nuanced sense of being within a space, that physical bodily thing that we almost understand intuitively before I understand it in the mind, was something I was really interested in. How could we actually bring that moment into the galleries? And so for me, what this exhibition is, it's an encounter with stuff, with the stuff of architecture. It's material stuff there for us. And then how that might echo within us in a sort of physical level and a psychological and emotional level. And these are not things, I think, that are commonly discussed. You know, when you open the newspaper, we talk about architecture in practical terms, in functional, economic, ecological. The emotional side is actually one probably a little bit difficult to discuss. And so I was interested in how we might do this. So it really has, I think, a number of factors. It was, you know, I thought, who do we talk to? How might we do this in the galleries? How might we use these incredible spaces here? And I think artists are incredibly good commentators on space, but it was like, can we push architects to test their own discipline and their own understanding of architecture to evoke spaces and to create spaces within these galleries and to consider what an exhibition might be? And it has been, I think there's sort of four factors which are under, you know, it has been an incredibly discursive process. It's been creative and it's been about resonance. And I'll come back to some of these things a little bit later as I talk. But this gives you a sense of some of the scale if you haven't been into these galleries. And as I said, it's been a process of discussion. This is, you know, these galleries have been transformed at a scale that I think we haven't seen before. This is some of the precedents that have come before that I was highly aware of when thinking about this exhibition, the wonderful Palladio exhibition back in 2010. And I was incredibly struck by, I had the chance to go around the Veneto and have a look at some of his buildings. And what really struck me is you went into each of his different villas and the scale and presence of them was incredible. And I hadn't been aware of the necessary difference in their size. It was only when walking around, looking at the models, and unfortunately this doesn't necessarily show it so well, but you know, suddenly there was a model, you know, and they were all the same scale, the models, that was about that big showing one of the villas alongside one that was that big. And I hadn't realised that difference in scale having been there. And I think the great thing about these sorts of exhibitions is you can put two things that would never be seen alongside one another in relative context. And then this exhibition of Living Bridges as well, which was back in 96, which saw water coursing through the main galleries. But it was, I guess, these things about Palladio of actually what is it to be in these spaces? How do you communicate the materiality, the kind of sensual qualities of it that have been these kind of questions for me? It has been a process of discussion. So it was an engagement with the architects, who I'll introduce you to in a minute, but before I do, I might just say a little bit about the questions. It was a very open brief, which is very difficult for architects. Most of them did curse me entirely. You know, architects like a strong brief. They want to know exactly what they're doing, the site, the function, the number of people who it's going to hold. And then I went in and said, I want to have a discussion with you about what this might be, what this exhibition might be. How might we talk about experience? How might we evoke the power of architecture in these incredible galleries? And you know, putting in some ways the functional aspects to one side. You know, what is it? And a lot of them said, you know, there's something about a space that just feels right. And that might be, it's quite an abstract term. I mean, a lot of these things are quite abstract. But there is something, I think you can probably all think about a space that has sort of felt right. And what is it about that space? Is it the acoustics? I don't think it ever is one thing. And that's what started to come out in these discussions. It was a complex layering of Maybe it's the way the sound is. It's the coming together of a particular scale, a particular void, a particular series of materials, the acoustics in it. All of these things start to make it feel right. And what is it about architecture that connects us to something, the human condition? We had a long discussion about the idea of presence, and these are sort of ideas that might be things that just architects talk about. I don't know, but in the Oxford Dictionary, he says, the state or fact, presence, is the state or fact of existing, occurring, or being present in a place or a thing. And what makes us present in that moment? And how might architecture be something which triggers us to be so? And when I was talking to Yvonne Farrell and Shelley McNamara of Grafton Architects, they said for them they became present the moment they stepped across a threshold. It was that sense of change that had ignited them into an awareness of where they were, made them feel alive and there. For Francis Carré, it was a sense of the noise of people made him feel as though he was present in his place. And for each of every, you know, and there was a whole series of discussions about memory and how we engage with spaces. And how might architecture actually encourage certain behaviours from us? And we also discuss things like the ordinary and the familiar. The sense of presence doesn't always come. You know, one can think about it in a building like the Pantheon, when you suddenly step in there and the hairs on the back of your neck stand on end. You know, that's a scale of architecture that really can take your breath away. But a lot of the discussions came up of saying maybe it's something very familiar. Maybe it's that moment where you touch a handrail that you've touched 100 times and you know you're at home, you know you're going upstairs, or it connects you with that place. And actually, architecture works across all of these scales with us. And it's not sensational. It's something else. So let me introduce you to some of the architects here and why we chose them. Many people have observed that there are no UK architects, and that was a deliberate choice. My feeling is if we're talking about experience, there's wonderful architecture just out here for people to experience, to go and to see. And so I wanted to encourage people to experience that, but to actually use these galleries, if we're going to go to this effort to create, as you'll see, this, you know, at a scale that's quite phenomenal, to bring people from around the world, to actually bring something other, that they may invite us not to define architecture in a particular way, but to open up how we might think about architecture and space from their different cultural, geographical, and generational perspectives. And these are the faces. I've been asked many times to say why these people, and I think I've frustrated those around me a lot by maybe not being explicit about why each of them. But I think there is something that they all share. They all deal with architecture on a practical and functional level. They're not doing whimsical buildings that are just for themselves. They understand what making architecture is. But yet they're also really interested in how people will respond. People are central to their work. It is about the human spirit. It's about the place in which they come from. This is not their architecture, and I'll show you, introduce you to some of their work. It can't be located anywhere. It comes from the place in which it's in. It deals with very local conditions. It understands the materials that are there. It celebrates tradition. They all understand history, but are not doing work in the for a pastiche. They understand history, tradition, and they create something very contemporary. But they're also very different. There have been similar exhibitions. There was an exhibition that you may have seen of one-to-one at the V&A where there were structures that were all located around there. And in that exhibition, they went out to 20 architects and they invited a response to a very discreet brief. And then they selected on the choice of what came in. This wasn't the case. This was a case of us putting together corners of different things. I had, you know, one architect, I thought, great, what else do I need alongside that to create a difference or a contrast? I wanted architects. We've got two Pritzker Prize winners here, which is the highest sort of celebration of architecture, and a really young practice, you know, in their late 30s. And getting that difference across generations, difference across sort of geographies. And as I locked one in, I locked another, realised I needed a different balance. And it was building, it was a sense of building these. And then working with these architects. And, you know, I'd challenge them, they'd challenge me. And that exhibition actually evolved in the process of these discussions. And there was a sort of reason for each of them. You know, I went to see one of Grafton's buildings and I realised they could deal with complexity. And I thought, well, if I can keep throwing these difficult questions, if they can build that, I can throw questions at them and they'll be able to tackle it. And for each of them, there's a sort of similar reason where I thought these are people I wanted to work with. And something that has emerged with this is that they have all given their heart and their spirit to it, and they've been really generous. There was a moment, you know, you say you're working with seven big name architects. There was a sort of fear that I'm, you know, we'd come to blows at some level, or there'd be some, you know, you hear stories of working with artists and what happens in the process. And actually, it has been wonderful. It's been enriching. There's never been, no one's ever thrown a hissy fit. They have all been kind and generous and constantly given to this project. And it made me realise that probably what is underlying a lot of these architects is their generosity of spirit, which is probably intuitively the reason I did approach them, or sort of I thought, yes, finally, you're the ones I want to work with. And it has been this church by quote, this quote by Churchill, we shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us, has been something which has echoed, and it's something that's often referred to. But I think it is an important thing. You know, architecture is often the background to our lives, and necessarily so. If we were aware constantly of the architecture around us, you know, it's there to serve in some ways what we do. In Sophia von Erlikau, one of the architects here, says good architecture is often invisible, but it allows whatever is happening in that space to be the best possible thing. And I think that's very true. It shouldn't always be the thing. You know, you probably all walked into this room and were aware of the sort of power of kind of the gold and this proportions of the space. It's a very powerful space around us. But there's a moment where it sort of disappears and you do what you do within it. And then it's nice when it comes back. Now, these kind of ideas I hoped might be part of the discussion or part of how people responded to the spaces around them. So this has, it was a bit, you know, this is, it has been a process, as I said, and a messy one. You know, we threw around ideas. With a couple of these architects, I felt really that I was being interviewed by them as much as they were being interviewed by me. The Chinese architect Li Jiadong sat down for about 4 hours saying, but I don't know whether you, how can you talk about architecture in a gallery setting? You know, architecture exists out there, it exists in landscape, it exists in setting. Can we do it? And I said, well, I believe we can. And I had to keep holding my ground. And it, you know, this has been the process for a lot of them. This was at a moment with, this is Grafton Architects, Yvonne and Shelley. And, you know, what is the nature of architecture? What are those really basic elements that talks about why we do it? Structure, form, light, materials. And it's been quite exhilarating. These discussions have been a very interesting part of the process. And it has been a creative one. It has been about creating an entire exhibition. And it's about, part of it has been about not just what happens in these galleries. Part of what's been under this discussion is how do you make people think about what they're experiencing within the galleries but echoing outside, that these are one installations here but they are also something you might be familiar with. And as we go through, hopefully this will echo. And I think, you know, we have these wonderful galleries. So this discussion was these aspects of architecture. How might you talk about the power of architecture? How you might create something yourselves? How might you use these galleries, which are really strong? I mean, they've got, they're big spaces. They're very axial. You've suddenly got volumes in here that are quite surprising. And I don't think we could have done this exhibition anywhere else. They're all naturally daylit from the top. If you think about places like Tate Modern with side lighting, you know, they're much more generic spaces. These spaces, when we let them, really change. So often we're used to seeing exhibitions that are very static. You know, we've got to keep the temperature the same, we've got to keep the humidity the same. As we've got in this kind of room, it's dark because we can't have light in them. This is architecture. This stuff is actually robust. We can open the doors. As you've seen, the main doors have actually come off the galleries, so you don't have to push through those heavy glass doors. Actually, we're saying the space exists outside. It gets cold in some corners. You get a breeze coming through them. The light changes. This exhibition is different at 8 a.m., it's different at 10 a.m., it's different as soon as it rains and you get the clouds coming over, and it's something very different at night. And that is something which is about architecture. It's never static, it changes with people. And it was something that was part of this discussion with the architects. They think about how to move people through spaces. And so I did say, you know, think about your space with one person. They started, a couple of them, with these beautiful images with one solitary person in it. And I said, hopefully there is not going to be one solitary person in this exhibition. Hopefully there's going to be lots of people. How do you celebrate the noise? How do you use people coming together as part of what you might help people to experience architecture? So these are the kind of things that we're going through. And you can see... what, you know, keep this image in your head. You can see all the stuff. You know, these are things we took off. This is the exhibition stuff we normally have to keep on the galleries. You know, so suddenly you don't see these spaces. There's five lighting tracks up in gallery three with this voile over the top which cuts more light down. So suddenly you never see the architecture up there. The galleries actually never really breathe in the same way. And it was a wonderful experience for me when I went into these spaces where the Australia show left, and we had this moment before Christmas where it was empty and the stuff started to come down and we painted the walls, and suddenly I saw the galleries completely differently. We never see them empty. They were completely empty. They were empty of all their lighting tracks. They were empty of all paraphernalia. We actually had to take down a couple of lighting tracks, which for whatever reason hadn't occurred to us, that how are we going to work in there? So we went in and at 4 o'clock realised that it was dark in there. We had to get a whole series of work lights in. But the galleries were transformed over this sort of period, which I'll talk a little bit. I've got a couple of hints of some of those things. But why don't I take you into the galleries? This is the plan of them, and you can see the scale of them. I mean, they are very big. It's 23,000 square feet of space in these galleries. And I should say that the discussion, as I said, with the architects was a very open one. Each of them started to locate their ideas of what they wanted to do, how they wanted to connect with senses. For instance, Kengo Kuma wanted to create a dark, contemplative space. And as he started to talk about his ideas, and he came up with a couple of proposals, I never gave them a set gallery to work in. I said each of them could have one or probably two spaces, because it was important to give a sense that they could create not just a room, but actually create an environment. They could create the space or how people came across their work or whatever they were doing, creating a context for their own projects. And so a lot of them went, two galleries, and they thought, boom, boom. And I had about five proposals which came back looking at that. But when Sekuma said he wanted something dark, contemplative, meditative, suddenly we have this, which is a dead-end space, and it made a lot of sense to put him there where you go and return. And so with each of these things, I moved them a couple of times, which didn't make them happy. Paul Grafton had three different designs for three different spaces. But when they said they wanted to talk about light, these are two really distinctive galleries, naturally about light. And also it made sense to end the exhibition on light. So it was these sort of moving around and nodding them. And they were very patient, as I said, as I moved them once or twice. And then they worked up their ideas into the specific galleries. And we came up with this plan. So I'm going to take you through the exhibition. There is no set route through the galleries, which you might have discovered, which may have bewildered you at first. Hopefully it was also pleasant. I mean, the idea was that... I mean, I'm fascinated to see actually how people respond to it. You know, do you go left, which we often do within a lot of our galleries, if you come to the galleries regularly? We're used to coming in, going left straight into gallery three. Do you move through here to the arches of the thing here? Or do you move right into this dark, echoey space of Grafton? And the idea is that you might return upon yourself. I myself have found when I wander through the city, there's a couple of buildings, there's one new change, that Nouvelle building right near St Paul's, which I really didn't like at all and found quite offensive. I don't know whether I should say that. But there was a moment, though, when I came on a bus along the Strand and I saw it in a completely different context with light coming down on it, and it suddenly made sense to me. It made sense to me in the way in which he'd kind of envisaged it potentially. And I realised that, you know, architecture is inhabited or seen from different places. It's seen in different light conditions. And I hope that, you know, you might come back upon yourself, see some of these installations from different moments. There's been times the galleries really were crazily cluttered as a building site, and I was going to a corner to clean up some stuff during the installation. And I had this view back down hear of Sutadamura's work, and I'd walked around a number of times, but this bit of rubbish in the corner took me to a whole other corner I hadn't seen. And I turned around and I saw his installation afresh. And I think the exhibition does offer that, and I hope it does, you know, that we've used these spaces to actually invite different perspectives and different ways of doing it, which is why there's no set route, which is why we encourage you to go back upon yourself and to think about it like a city. But as I say, in a PowerPoint presentation, I've got to kind of take you through some sort of route. So I'm going to take you this way, into Gallery 3, along into Cooma, back here, and through Grafton. So that's the way we're going to go, and I'll sort of explain it because there are certain relationships that are set up between the different installations. I was going to start with Eduardo Sutadamura and Alvaro Cesar. These are the two biggest names, potentially. They're both Pritzker Prize winners, as I said, which is the celebrated architectural award. They are two separate practices. Alvaro Cesar is a sort of master. He's 80, and Sutadamura was his protege and is similarly a celebrated master now. They run their own practices. They now and then have collaborated, for instance, on this the Serpentine Pavilion here in London in 2005 and numerous other ones. But they do have an office above one another. They are sort of related. They're also friends, and they're kind of intellectual companions. They sit and drink whiskey, I think, most nights together. They now actually live in a building designed by Eduardo, which Cesar kind of has various comments on. You know, he likes some aspects of it, but not all. And that, you know, they spar about ideas about architecture. And I'd asked them to work together potentially on a project like this. I thought they might do one single installation. There was a moment not too far into it where Cesar says to me, "Kate, we have divorced. I'm going to do mine, and Eduardo is going to do his." And they did. And actually, what it enabled was being able to put one of them in the courtyard and one of them inside. Because as I said, it's not just about, for me, it's never been, the exhibition never started just in these galleries. It started the minute you cross Piccadilly. We have here an incredibly rich architectural spatial experience. You know, you come through those archways across the courtyard, which gently slopes up, through the kind of domestic size foyer, which if you were here for Hockney and Manet, you remember how tiny it is. You know, it was built as a home. And then come up to those stairs, which are wider and more generous, the sense of ceremony as you come up into the main galleries. And I wanted to celebrate that. I wanted people to be aware of it. And I think these architects have really asked us to draw attention to it. They are masters. They know, they pair things back to the absolute simplicity. You can see they edit out all details. And they invite us to look as well. They capture specific views, and I'll run through a few of their projects. This is also one, an old one of Alvaro Cesar's, and you can barely see where the architecture starts and nature begins, but there's a really subtle interaction he does, and there's films at the end of the exhibition where he talks about this project and evokes it beautifully. So I won't talk about it because it's hard to do so through a single image. This is the work of Eduardo Sutadamura, and you can see his kind of reference to Cesar, but he's expressing himself in quite sort of in a more expressive way than potentially Cesar does. So this is a sketch from when Cesar came to the courtyard, and he was watching how people move through it and the spaces. And for him, he responded to the column. He wanted to create something which was, Cesar says, architects don't create, they don't invent anything, they transform reality. And he's not about invention, he's about creating a sense of continuity with the past, and he wanted to talk about the evolution of the column. So he's created this installation which has one column here lying down with its capital standing here, one where the column starts to stand up, the third where the column stands up with its capital on top. And you may well have walked right past it or wondered what on earth it was. But his work is a bit like that. It does invite us to look and to think. And when I first got it, I must say, I looked at it and thought, goodness, three columns in the courtyard, will it work? And I went back into the courtyard myself and started to look up. And you can see actually how much the columns do start to define and give a rhythm to that space. They're part of the facades. They're not like a column of rhythms that we actually walk through, but they're there as gentle reminders of a kind of classical presence of this courtyard. And it makes you look up. And he was sitting, the yellow came about because he was sitting sort of up here doing a sketch. He smokes incessantly as well, so had to be outside and was sketching. And a bus went past, a yellow bus went past. And it reminded him, it connected him to the city, and he suddenly went, this space is one about being contained, it's the forecourt to the academy, but it's the entrance to the city as well. And so he wanted to bring that colour in, and that was what had kind of ignited him. And then it was interesting, when a Suter de Mora also, a similar sense of tradition and continuity, and he said, when he walked into the galleries, he said, these galleries are wonderful. The classical tradition, the classical architecture, makes me feel secure. I know where I am in a space. That, you know, the axial, that sort of radial piece, I know where I am. I know where the entrance is. I know I go left here and I go right there. And he wanted to celebrate some of those moments and talked about, and he says, architects don't design space or create space. They design the limits to it. And there I was talking about space. And he's like, for architecture, there is... We do walls, we do doors, we do windows, and we do roofs. And that's what we do. And I'm talking, it's all about space. And it was great, actually, it really challenged me. And he's true. That's, you know, that is what architects do very often. And so he created this piece which looked at the archway here in this door. And it was really interesting. There was a moment where I had both of these installations came in, and they really challenged me. You know, they're subtle, they're different, they're a different genre to how I might have thought. And there's a bit, as you go up the main staircase, where the columns meet the archway. And I was like, Caesar. It was a, you know, moment of serendipity, really, where these things happen and made me look differently. And it was great, because I passed a colleague on the staircase who was actually holding this exact sketch by Hugh Casson. And you can see that moment where you come up the stairs and you actually look all the way through the galleries. And normally we put glass doors here, glass, because obviously it's transparent, but it's not. They're heavy. If you create a door which is 2 meters high and 1 meter wide, it's really heavy. And if you remember trying to walk through those, I mean, I come in and out of the, you know, those galleries all the time, and you've really got to hold the doors open for anybody with any disability, you know, with anyone who's not mobile. It's really difficult to get in. I thought, that's not the way to start an exhibition. Let's reopen this axis, which is a really beautiful one. And it was a colleague who said it. I thought, you know, a lot of this exhibition has pushed a lot of boundaries in the academy, or the things we couldn't do. And it was somebody else who said, we could take the doors off. And I was like, I hadn't even dreamed that we could. And it was a great thing to be able to do it. And I hope you enjoy being able to walk in freely into that space and celebrate that access as you come up. But this is the thing that Suter de Mora picked up. You know, these are the doors. You know, they're not transparent at all, are they? They cut the architecture in half here and block it off. Suter picked up on, you know, these diagonal axes, celebrated the fact that there's, you know, the moments that are opened up by these spaces, and looked at the two things. There's something that, you know, I think one's aware of in these galleries, but your main axes here are the round, these big arched doors in marble. And the secondary axes, which run, and go and have a look at it, are all in the timber. They're more humble. They're a very different form and style. And I guess I hadn't read it in the same way of looking at it, but he wanted to pick up on these two moments and then say, okay, if I'm creating a door now, how would I make it? How would I recreate that space? And he did it out of this really fine, upstanding concrete, which is something that couldn't have been done 10 years ago. And he came, and you could have actually could have done this with a laser sort of jet that went all around. You know, there's technology which would have told him exactly how to do it, and he could have created it out of fiberglass mould. But he didn't. He's Portuguese, and he went up to the man he knows up the corner who's made that a lot of that concrete work within the Braga Stadium. And they worked together. And this is the concrete being mixed with fine shavings of metal, which is what gives it its strength. So it's not, because normally in concrete it's got big reinforcement bars, and then you've got to have cover, which is what means that it's got to have a certain thickness. But actually the steel is within part of the concrete here. And they made these quite incredible doors, formwork. I live in a concrete building, and I tell you what, I wish my concrete finish was as beautiful as it is here. But it's because they actually got furniture makers to come and carve all of these pieces of timber. And he said it was mahogany. I think it's some of these pieces, but they're absolutely, you can see, I mean, it's kind of sent you want to touch it itself. And that's what's given the really fine form on these things. And go in and look at them and touch them, because they are quite incredible of how they feel. Then we go into Gallery 3, to the work of Pezzo von Erlikhausen. And these are the youngest practice. They're in their late 30s, and as I say, that is very young for an architect. Most professions, you know, you're reaching your peak, but this is a very young practice. And they're interested, they live in Concepcion, which is 5 hours south of Santiago, and they really... It's the new world. They see themselves on the edge of the edge. You know, they're not even in the main architectural scene, which is emanating from around Santiago and Valparaiso. They kind of there's no cultural buildings in Concepcion. It's a port town. And they feel a freedom in that. And they feel a freedom from the sense that there's not the same built heritage. If you think of Europe with this sort of strong lineage of built heritage, and also say somewhere like Brazil, which has a really strong architectural heritage from people like Niemeyer, they respond to the place in which they're in, and they're interested in architectural typologies and forms. And this is their house and studio, and they're interested in how geometry and shapes and space might come together. You can see it's very simple in its expression. And they've repeated a square plan 12 times. So it's repeated three times here and down and then vertically. And they're playing with just how, if you repeat the same form but simply changing it, it might create different spatial relationships, which makes more sense if you've seen the plan of it. But it echoes this, and this is the staircase in their own house, which runs up the back, connecting their house and studio together. And if you've been into the installation, this will maybe make sense to you, the sense of something very ordinary. This is another house that they've done. I thought I might just take a moment to talk about it because it's a very interesting one. They also challenged me because I was talking about experience. For me, architecture is not about the object. It is about something more nuanced, about experience. But yet you look at this and it is a very tough and rough building that is almost like an object. And it might look to you like a fort from the outside. It's maybe not very forgiving. But it's really interesting. I went and spent an evening and a day there, and we had this conversation. None of the spaces inside are defined. You move around and it creates different relationships. You can sit here, have a connection to somebody else living or being in one of these other spaces, and they invite us to inhabit the spaces as we see fit. And we sat throughout the day, and the light and the air changed. And when you see it from the outside, it looks as though you might be completely contained. But as you can see, as you're sitting in here, you have this real connection to the spaces outside. And it completely evolved as we sat there. It changed, went from this colour to suddenly the light changing, and these sort of these rays of light moving around it. And it was a completely animated space. And as I left and walked back up the hill and looked back down on it, it was no longer an object. It was a completely alive and animated experience, and that might echo with you when you go into their installation now. I mean, I don't know, that's my sort of personal position. But then they were really interested in the fact that we see these galleries, we exist on the ground plane, we look at the walls, we sometimes look at sculptures within it, but we don't celebrate or ever get to celebrate, you know, to experience the world above, the, you know, the space, the void, the kind of the proportions. So they created this structure, which I don't want to give too much away, that is very simple. It goes back to their ideas about geometry. They talk about neutral elements, which is why it's basically a square atop four cylinders, round cylinders. It's really basic in their form of what they do. And it occupies exactly half of Gallery 3, our largest gallery. You can see how each of these corners lines up with the geometry of the space. It invites us to look at the space, and it's very neutral in what it expresses. And you walk in and you see it's monumental in form. This is some of the representations they have. But I hope that when you go in, it moves from this being this monumental thing to being something much more human and intimate. They also, for them, they see it as a total experience. And it's interesting, these are their representations that they have created. And they see it, this is the ramp that's behind here, hidden behind this wall. And it is about the exertion of going up, celebrating movement up, making us physically engage with how we explore architecture. Keep that in mind as you do. But also, I want to give you a little background into how some of these things have been made, because if you go in, you might wonder how on earth we did it. We had, I think, 17 days to get all of these installations. It was a building site. It was controlled chaos. I should be careful about what I say. But we were running 7 building sites all at the same time throughout those galleries while being open. And this structure had to be prefabricated. And it was made by these Chilean workers, brought over in a kit of parts. As you see, this is it being set up. It was 206 component parts. It was an IKEA flat pack gone berserk. They knew exactly where every piece was. And there's on the iPads in there, you've got one of 8 pages of a spreadsheet which shows the number of each pieces. And then they said exactly where every single piece of timber had to go in the container ship as it came over. And they came over with 4 workers who have made both of those houses that we saw. They know their work, they know their details, how they want to create something. And they were in here in these. They've never left Chile. They've never left Concepcion, I don't think. They never had passports. The entire village came out to see them be sort of let off. They came in their big red overalls and they were so proud. And I was so worried we were going to lose them the first time. You know, they're staying down at the Strand, walking across London. I thought they'd get excited by Covent Garden, Soho. We'd find that, you know, they'd get lost on the way. They were in here every morning at 7 or 8, working through to 10 at night. And so proud of their working as they, you know, got in and the English workers went off at sort of 5 or 6. And they were hammering, making this thing. And it was an incredible thing, actually, being in the galleries alongside it. And, you know, these are some moments. There's some stuff on the website and around that gives you a little bit about it. But what's interesting, in some ways in contrast to that, was the work of Ken Gokuma, who's 2 galleries along. And I'll flick through his work. Maybe I'll come back to it. But this is the installation. But this is them making the work. So I'll go back a little bit. But, you know, the Chileans came in with their 2 container loads and the Japanese came in with their 2 small boxes to create their work. And I think it said a lot. And they sat cross-legged quietly on the floor making their delicate pieces. And it was a really, I think it says quite an interesting thing about this. And part of the reason I put these 2 alongside one another is Kuma actually talks about the anti-object. He's interested in architecture which is not about an object. He breaks it down into its component parts. And it's almost the antithesis of Pezzo von Oerickhausen. And he talks about an idea of weak architecture, which might be a little bit scary when you see some of his buildings, but he doesn't mean it in the way in which it's going to fall down. But actually, in breaking it all down into places, into sort of sizes and scales that we relate to, which the human body relates to, and creating a space in between. He talks about the idea of ma and the void. And I didn't really understand it myself until I saw this structure inside here. And so this is his installation in the academy. And when he, you know, this space is really important. It's not just about the structure, it's actually about the space it contains. You move around it, and actually the imagination can sort of go into that space in that's charged in the centre of it. And it's made of pieces of bamboo. It's very fine. Each of these pieces of bamboo is 4 millimetres in diameter, so it gives it its own strength. And you see how it's pulled apart here to give total sort of diamond shape. Each of these pieces of bamboo has also been sat in a vial of scent, and it's through a capillary action that the scent moves through each of the pieces of bamboo. And the large western room is the smell of hinoki, which is the Japanese cypress, which is sacred. And, you know, he was drawing us into the fact that he chooses a material often for its scent, and it's very important in traditional Japanese building is the scent of a material, something we've lost now with concrete. You know, it doesn't have the same scent. And the small western room is a space of being contained, and that has a scent of tatami, which is the traditional Japanese floor matting, which for Kuma he associates with peaceful and restful sleep. It was obviously what he was brought up sleeping upon. So these are some of the crazy experiments they did. This is putting the bamboo in a room that is in spaces that are exactly the same volume and size of ours there. Anyway, they did a lot of work on this. obviously the making. Then we've got Deborah Frances Kere, who is one room on. And Kere is born in Burkina Faso, but got a German aid scholarship and was taught, and so finished his education in Germany, then went on to architecture, and while still a student, won the Aga Khan Award for Architecture for this primary school in his hometown of Gando. And he lives this life between Africa and Europe. And people for him are implicit in every project. He goes and he listens to people, and it's always about a dialogue. What do you want? You know, what? There is no notion of an architect there. They've been building buildings without an architect for always. But what might he add? How can he hear what they might want? What might a school be? How might he, you know, for him it's about having light and air. You know, how do you get kids to sit still for 5 hours? Actually give them some fresh air and light is a really important part of it. Make it a pleasant space to be in. And he engages them in the making, in what this building will be, in the making process, and then in how they might inhabit it. And this is, I think it's, for me, quite an interesting little illustration of when it becomes architecture. You know, these are pots that are commonly used for carrying water. He simply sliced them, put them into the roof of this library, and create an atmosphere in this space. It's not just a space for shelter. It actually is a space you want to be in. It's got that curved wall. You can imagine that you might want to curl up and find a corner to read your book. You've got light. You've got that connection to the outside, and it's. I think it's. Anyway, I'll let you look at it. But this is his installation before people came into it. If you see it now, it will look nothing like this. And he came up with an idea, and we had a long discussion. Did he build with what he knew, which is clay? And he said, you know, he didn't want to do some sort of ethnic interpretation. He wanted to actually create something which was appropriate to London. And so he chose this material here, which is a honeycomb plastic, and it's a really standard construction material. It's the stuff we never see. It's the infill indoors. It's unglamorous. It's rough. It's tough. It's not very nice to work with, as the guys discovered when they were trying to make it. And it's not structural. But he wanted to create something, a tunnel, which punched through his two galleries, made us look at the classical architecture, but also funneled us together so we became close. As he says, you'll see him, he talks in the film about it. You know, in Europe, you don't like being too close to one another. And I wanted to make you be close to one another. And he wanted also to create a space of gathering. So there's a sort of wide space in which you can kind of gather. But people have stuck straws in the chairs. But do go in and sit and gather and take the straws out, because he wants you to be alongside one another. And it was a really interesting process, because he set up this non-structural material, was going to all be held together by these rods that the engineers told us it would work, and went through all these calculations, suddenly found it didn't. This is being held up by by a forklift. And there was a series of experiments that took place within this structure, to the point where it actually almost happened on site, where we were still experimenting and working with it. And there's some information on the iPads about it. But it was an interesting story, and this was about a journey that he set something off and then it became something else. And it requires the entire thing to be built, a series of arches, to give its total structural stability. And there's a moment, we've got a little clip of it being made, and you do see it's sort of legs. It was kind of like an arch on roller skates for a while, and it was a bit terrifying. But then it was working with material, and it became something else in the process. And he's invited people to then engage with it, and that's where the straws are, if you've heard about the straws. But go and look at it. It will look something completely different now, and it will look at something completely different later. But that's Kere's spirit. He doesn't want to hold it back. I'm going to race through these last couple, but this is Li Jiadong, who's interested in kind of resisting this sense that so much of China is about importing architecture from the West and something else. He says, what is appropriate Chinese architecture, and how might you forge tradition with a contemporary expression? These are some of his works. There's great films about these architects actually as well on the website, 6-minute films, so there's information around. This is a library he did, which has covered in the sticks which are used for cooking and fire all around the neighbourhood, and it blends into the environment around. And he talks about architecture as, it's not about the container, it's about the thing that's contained. You can see that this is sort of an object which blurs into the landscape. And when you see his installation, you'll see the echo of these things here. And finally, Grafton Architects. These are an Irish duo who are really interested in the stuff of architecture. You know, their work is tough, it's robust. They tackle materiality in a really interesting way. And I probably had the most dialogue with these guys. But you can see some of this materiality, structure, light, the basics of what they're interested in. And so when they started talking about light, we put them in the two galleries which were really distinct for light. I don't know if you remember the summer exhibition. You know, when you're going around at all, it's the one time when we have the lights off. You get into Gallery 9, which is our second but last gallery, and it's always brighter. And that's about the proportions of where the roof light is and how it sort of floods down the walls. And they wanted to celebrate these things and play with it and look at how light is that thing which defines us in a place. You know, the light in Northern Europe is different from the light in Southern Europe, is different from the light in Australia, is different from the light seasons change with, you know, seasons, time of day. It's that thing which animates architecture. It brings it alive. It makes structure heavier. It can sometimes make it lighter. And they wanted to celebrate these ideas and introduce a sense of time. So I would encourage you to spend time in these. They are on a site. There's two different cycles that emulate in this room, which was about weight. It's a sort of more poetic thing. You go through a cold winter day to a storm coming across the sky to a warm winter day, and it's a moody atmospheric. It shows you how light really can be evocative. And the second of their rooms is about lightness. And this again changes. It's got lights outside the galleries, actually, which are emulating a London winter day, which is sort of on a program again of 20 minutes, slightly sped up of what we'd have, but you can go through an entire cycle of a London day over 20 minutes. I realise I'm kind of running to the end of it, and it's, as I said, it's a difficult exhibition to talk about in some ways because it's not really what I think of it. It's not really what the architects meant. You know, someone said to me the other day, "What does it mean?" And I said, "Well, it." You know, it's about how we encounter it. There's this thing where there's us and there's the object, there's the architecture, and it's the thing that happens in between, how we might interpret it, how we might respond to it. And, you know, it's been amazing seeing the last couple of days actually how people have responded. Some people, "I really don't like that, I don't get it." And that's okay. And sometimes someone said to me on Friday night, they said they're almost moved to tears by something. And I was like, yeah, it is about feeling. It's about responding to space. And it's a very difficult and abstract thing to discuss. But I hope it generates discussion, if nothing else, and I hope it can evoke something. But I thought I might just end on a couple of notes of why it might be of interest now, too. And I think that there is something about existing in the real, you know, that sense of the reality of a material. I showed a very well-known academic around who's still teaching a lot, and he said that he finds that his students are so used to designing on computers that they've lost, you know, he asks them what it's made of and they can't almost tell them. They can talk about the form, but if they might say, "Oh, it's wood. What sort of wood? What does, you know, like, why? What does it feel like? What does it smell like?" The people have lost that engagement. A lot of students have lost that engagement. And in some ways, the virtual is becoming so incredible at the moment. It's exciting. It's thrilling. But actually, the real is as exciting and can offer us something different. I think also potentially, I've certainly found, you know, this sense of increased mobility. We can work anywhere now. We can take a laptop. So actually, we have more choice over the spaces we inhabit, potentially. And actually, how do we choose those spaces? Why might we choose those spaces? Can we get ones that make us feel more comfortable or are just actually pleasant to be in? And that sense of being alive is really important. Stopping for a moment, looking around, touching something, taking us out of the busyness. I mean, London is as intense as it comes. When do we just take that moment to stop and to look and to appreciate it? And might architecture be one mechanism which allows us or invites us to do it and makes us feel human and what we are? So on that note, I might finish, and we've got 2 minutes for questions if you've got them. So thank you.
Okay. We do have a couple of minutes for questions. Would anyone like to ask or Kate a question or comment on the exhibition?
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
I'm a Portuguese architect from Porto. I've studied in Sousa-Moura and CISAS University. And I really like to congratulate about this exhibition because I think that architecture is about, how to say, about perceptions, about being alive. And when I saw that this exhibition is going to be here, I thought about Peter Zumthor book, no? Yes. Thinking Architecture, because I think that was the book that made me think about what is feeling touching wood, or what's about touching stone. So I'd like to ask you, and now I was thinking, why not Zumthor to be one of the invited architects? I'm sure you thought about Zumthor also. Yeah.
Peter Zumthor he's written these two really beautiful books, Thinking Architecture and Atmospheres. And it was actually a discussion with Peter Zumthor, he was the one in Rome who I was talking to. And he's talked very much about atmosphere, and it is a very important thing. He sort of has owned a lot of this and talks a lot about presence. And I did have a series of conversations with him, inviting him and seeing whether he might come into the exhibition, but it didn't end up happening for sort of practical reasons, and it would have been fascinated to see what he did. But I've also been thinking about it as well, and in some ways he has really owned and talked a lot about these ideas, and it's quite interesting to see how other architects who probably come from slightly different places have actually responded to similar things. But I think Zumthor's work is very much in this territory and has been a real inspiration actually to me as well. And I would encourage you to look at his books and his buildings, because they are really beautiful.
Anyone else?
Were the spy holes at the top of the spiral staircases and ramp construction, did they occur to them as they got to that height so that we could look through and see the cherubs on the border around the edge, or had they already planned that?
What happened, I went down and saw them in January last year, and I took a whole series. I had to tell them they'd never been to the galleries, and I had to take down a whole series of drawings and to describe them, and I had stuff everywhere showing them the different galleries, and I actually showed them it was in this room that we had a lecture by Stanton Williams, who designed the bronze exhibition. And they showed us a section through that gallery three. And if you remember bronze, you remember how big those things were? And I remember just standing beneath them. And it really struck me. Paul put up this section which ran through the galleries, and the bronzes were about a third of the space in there. And I was, oh my God, they felt as though they occupied the whole thing. And it was really potent. It stayed in my mind. So when I went down to describe these spaces to them, the only way I could do it was to take this section and went, these things are ginormous, and look at the space. And that was in part where they responded to it. They got really excited by this. And so they worked up, they were interested in an idea about moving people up into that space, and there's a whole series of different things that they wanted to engage with, moving people in different spatial relationships. But at the end of it, at the end of that, 5 days, we're going to come up with a proposal. And they came up with it fairly similar to what is now this square atop round columns. And then the process evolved into various things, and we wanted the ramp, and then it went down from 9 columns to 4, and it evolved quite, I think, really positively. It went through different things. But then they came over in July, and we went up on a little genie lift that took us up into the up to that level. And it's only our engineers who do the lighting who go up there, so we stood up there with real excitement. And it was when they were up there that they realised that that square needed something else, and that they wanted it to not be like a viewing platform, to be like a room. They've always described it like a room in the sky. That's why that height is sort of to here, so you feel secure in it. They don't want you to feel uncomfortable. I mean, there's moments where you do, you're aware of yourself, but they wanted to create a sense of intimacy, but then realise that there were those little, that the angels were there, and we went up on the genie, and suddenly looking at them, they were like, we want to give this to people, that the things. And actually you'll notice that was all prescribed. But yet when they come with all of their projects, there's little hand touches that they do, and the wrapping of the leather around the handrail at the start, that's something they did on site, where they're like, it's quite cold, London's quite cold, and they didn't want the first moment you have of touching the handrail to be cold. They wanted to have the leather wrapped around, so that's why that's there. And you'll also notice that there's a couple of other little baby peepholes in the cylinders. And they told me they were going to do it, and I hadn't seen it, and I saw that they have. But there's a couple of little moments where you can see and look back out. It's about that big. But that's the sort of little hand things that they have done, and they've rounded a couple of the ramp bits. And actually, they wrote to me and said that there was one other bit they wanted me to go in with some sandpaper and go and do another moment. There was one other little thing they hadn't done. But they are very much about adding those little touches after. And I think it's, you know, you can go and find those and discover those things in the galleries.
I would say that when you do go into the exhibition, I mean, do take the time to look at the ceiling. It's an exhibition, obviously, that encourages you to really look at the space in the Royal Academy, and it's just so wonderful that everything has come down and that you can see it, you know, in all of its glory. Anyway, I encourage you all to see the exhibition if you haven't already. I encourage you to see it again at different times of day and in different weather conditions if you have seen it. Most of all, I want to thank Kate Goodwin for a wonderful lecture. Thank you.